I'm J.G. Michael, and this is Parallax Views.
Parallax is you observe an object, you see a change, but that change is not really a change in the object, but just a change in how you relate to the object in your perspective of the object.
Welcome to the testing room of the Parallax Corporation's Division of Human Engineering.
Now please cross the chair. And you will sit down. Make yourself comfortable. And be sure to place each one of your hands on the box on either side of the chair. Making sure that each one of your fingers is on one of the white rectangles. Just sit back. Nothing is required of you except to observe the materials that are presented to you. Be sure to keep your fingers on the box at all times. Alright? Hope you find the test a pleasant experience.
On this edition of Parallax Views, we venture into the world of New York hardcore punk rock, NYHC for life. And joining us is a legend of the early scene, Paul Cripple of the iconic Reagan Youth. Reagan Youth were a mainstay of the hardcore punk scene back in the 1980s. They played at legendary venues like CBGB's, as well as participating in Rock Against Racism concerts. They're a band that wore their politics on their sleeve, sticking it to the Reagan-era government with fast, catchy, and rockin' anthems of anti-fascism and anarchism. Now, if you haven't listened to Reagan Youth before, do me a favor right now. Pause this episode, go on YouTube, and look up their EP, Youth Anthems for the New World Order. Because let me tell you, it is an indisputable classic. Since their wild heyday in the 1980s, Reagan Youth has gone on to be featured in a number of soundtracks for movie and television, including the TV series Shameless, the Nicolas Cage movies The Frozen Ground and Mom and Dad, and perhaps most famously, the Brendan Fraser, Adam Sandler, and Steve Buscemi comedy Airheads. But enough with all the pre-conversation blather, let's go punk rock with Paul Cripple of Reagan Youth. Welcome to Parallax Views. Paul Cripple of the iconic New York hardcore punk, and not just New York hardcore, but New York hardcore punk band Reagan Youth.
Hey, glad to hear from you, JG.
So, Paul, I have a few younger listeners, and they may be unfamiliar with Reagan Youth, which I think is a shame because Reagan Youth to me is legendary. But maybe you could talk a little bit about what Reagan Youth is and, you know, what New York hardcore punk is. Because, like I said, a lot of people think it's the same as the New York hardcore scene.
When we were in junior high, me and this kid who was very smart, he was in the smart classes, I was in the not-so-smart classes, you know, we see each other, we actually did do sixth grade in the same class, but then when we went into junior high school, you know what, we became a little tighter and we talked a lot about music and wrote a bunch of silly songs. Now, I remember around junior high school, my sister bought me a leather jacket and she said, there's a new thing, it's punk rock, you got to get into it. And this kid, David Surgeon, you know, his name was David Rubenstein, but he became my singer, David Surgeon, knew more about rock and roll than my sister. So, of course, he already knew about the punk thing. And when he saw I was into punk, we really, you know, got into it. And yeah, in the beginning, the songs kind of sounded like, you know, Deep Purple-ish because it was still like the 70s. But then as the 80s rolled around, there was an election and Ronald Reagan was going to become president. And we didn't want to be junior high school kids singing about, you know, I don't know, like very politically incorrect, childish lyrics turned into something very serious where I always considered it we were going to expose the evils of society and felt like that was a good thing for an artist to do.
Can I interject real quick?
Sure.
I wanted to get what was it, because I actually was born after Reagan. What was the general feeling around the time Reagan got elected? What were the sort of concerns with Reagan being in power?
All right, this new Republican Party, a new Republican Party has taken shape. Now, Nixon was the old Republican Party. Nixon was way more liberal than Obama ever was. I mean, Nixon was willing to give heroin addicts heroin. Straight up. I think Johnson started a methadone, a clinic thing, but Lyndon B. Johnson, but because it got so bad. But, in the 70s, Gerald Ford told New York City, go to hell, and it like made a front page news. That was the old Republican Guard. The new Republican Guard was now talking about, welfare mothers and their welfare Cadillacs. And I mean, it's kind of like unfair. Like, I remember there was a lot of Russian Jews that came into Queens around that time. And they're like, what do they need welfare for? They're in, fur coats. Motherfucker, can I curse?
Yeah, no problem, Paul. No problem.
All right, motherfucker, they come from Russia. Everyone wears fucking fur coats there. Probably kill the fucking bear themselves to fucking wear that shit. I mean, it's freezing there. So of course they come here, I'll look at them with their fur coats and they want their fun. It's a little bit more deeper than that. They're like, come here. And what does, and around this time, that's when, Donald Trump's father, when you think about it, and Trump is from Queens, the most diverse spot on this planet. The place you'll see a black kid, Hispanic kid, white kid, and Asian kid shooting hoops, together, on a basketball court. Yeah, I know it happens in other places, but Queens has a very high diversity rate. But all he did was make public housing, build his own factories, make his own boilers, and overpriced. Charge himself more than what it's worth so he could pass that on to the, rent. Look, I have to raise your rent because the boilers cost so much. Motherfucker, the guy's making his own boilers. And he's saying they cost too much. Motherfucker, you're making them yourself. If anything, rent should go down, And that's another thing. When the recession hit and everyone's property wasn't worth what it was anymore? Oh, Ma, your house, remember when you bought it for $80,000 and it steadily went up to $100,000 and $120,000, $140,000 and was worth $200,000, and then boom, the recession hit and it was worth what it was worth when you bought it way back when, $80,000? How come the rents didn't go back to when it was way back when? How come the recession hits everyone? Landlords? Fucking, no one's my lord. Not even fucking Jesus Christ. The fuck out of here, landlord. Don't fucking lord the land, bitch.
Well, so So you're forming this band. You're working with Dave around, I guess, high school, and Reagan is coming
to
power.
Well, we love music. We love music, and Dave in junior high, all right, listen to Emerson, Lake, and Palmer. When you were cool and you were smart, too, like you got A's, but you didn't have to study because you were so smart and you could hang out and party, you listened to Emerson, Lake, and Palmer. Like, look, I'm smart and cool. Like, you know, other guys listen to, you know, Kiss, and, you know, there was always that Hendrix contingent, he's best, you know, and all that shit. Dave in paper mache, you know, paper mache class.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
People were making hands and heads, you know. I made a hand or a head, I forgot which one we made. Everyone was doing stuff like that. Dave actually made a paper mache of a Tarkus. Now, a Tarkus was an album by Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, and it's basically an armadillo tank. Half armadillo, half tank. You know, like, like that song, you know, I could drive my very own tank by the Stranglers, like, you know. And what kid does that? Seriously. I mean, it impressed the fuck out of me. I knew I wanted to be in a band with him, but I had to convince him. I had to, like, really push him because his dad, who was a military guy, was very strict disciplinarian. He wasn't allowed out, you know. After school, we all played, you know, baseball, softball, football, hockey, whatever, basketball. He, you know, couldn't do that. And on the weekends, it was, like, iffy. And then when we tried to do a band, it was, like, touch and go until the ninth grade when I got to go over his place and got me over. And we actually got some kids. And even though it was, like, Pots and Pans and Sears guitar, we did record Degenerated and some other songs with different lyrics, like I was saying. And then when we went to high school, there was a drummer from this other junior high, and his name was Charlie, and he looks like one of the Ramones. And
well, you guys went to the same high school as the Ramones, right?
Yeah. Well, we didn't go the same years. I mean, they went 10 years prior to us, but it's nice to go to a high school and you like punk rock, and it's this band, the Ramones, and it's like, wait a second, you mean four doofuses that went to fucking our high school 10 years ago just put on leather jackets and are just doing, like, you know, not even lyrics, but, like, you know, chants or cheers. Hey, ho, let's go. Hey, ho, let's go. And, you know, shit, great guitar sound. Great rhythm guitar player, Johnny Ramone. I mean, really great sound. You know, loved it. You know, and I love, you know, Dee Dee Ramone. I mean, bass was always the, like, instrument. If you're going to be in a band, you know, bass was cool as fuck, cooler than, yeah, lead guitar didn't matter, punk rock. I mean, you know, I liked it, you know, and I liked, you know, listening to Generation X and Damned. I thought they had good guitar players. Cheetah Chrome, Wicked Ass, good guitar player. But I, you know, I still thought classic rock, what they call classic rock now, which is what I grew up with. I mean, I grew up loving that shit, and then I had to stop liking it because I was punk rock. But a part of you never really stops liking it. So, you know what? It was important for us to write simple three-chord songs with, you know, a catchy chorus. That was the key. And when we got the bass player, he was a guy that was supposed to go to Forest Hills High. He did go, but he dropped out.
That's Andy. Andy Apathy was the bassist, and then the drummer was Charlie Tripper.
Yeah, Charlie Tripper was the kid who played drums with us the very first time, the original drummer, Charlie Tripper. He's still alive. And Andy was that guy that, like, was so far ahead of the curve. Like, when me, Charlie, and Dave were trying to lose our virginity, Andy was having threesomes. Andy ate out my sister's best friend, all right? He was only a year older than us, too, and he was not going to high school, but you saw, you picked up Les McNeil, you know, punk magazine, John Holmstrom's publication, and you see a picture. Oh, that's Andy, and he's in a picture with Joan Jett Debbie Harry and, you know, David Johansen and Joey Ramone, you're like, oh, damn, this guy's like, you know, he's where it's at, man. You know, and he's the guy that books our first show, you know. You know, because we were just three kids that were playing music. And when we finally played Reagan Youth, I mean, we were thinking, what's going to be our name? Because we had been going under PUS, because that's what we called ourselves in junior high, you know, because I had really bad acne. And it just trust me, it just went that way. But then now we're going to be serious. We're not little kids. We're, you know, Reagan Youth. You know, and Dave made these arm patches, and we put them on our leather jackets. It was a bitch to play with a fucking leather jacket on. It gets real hot. But, you know, we did it, and, you know, it was important for everyone in the band to be socially aware. And just like my sister graduated high school, and when she went to City College, you know, a city college like Hunter College here in New York City, she was able to go, and my parents didn't have to pay for it because the government, you know, helped out. As soon as Reagan, you know, became president and it was time for me to go to college, that wasn't around anymore. So I knew this man was a scumbag. It's like, wait, I mean, the last president let my sister go get a fucking college education, and now this prick, it wants to deprive me of one? You know, so yeah, I knew he was a prick. So fucking easy now he's a prick. Jimmy Carter's just slow. You know what I mean? But fucking Ronald Reagan, there's something like, something inherently evil. I don't want to demonize anyone, but inherently evil about that mindset.
Yeah, I remember there were, you know, I think it was the band Wasted Youth. They had a cover with, you know, Reagan and Reagan, the Manson symbol on the head. The Charles Manson symbol, yeah. I mean, you know, it's funny because now there was this leaked audio tape that came out a few months back, I believe, of Reagan referring to Africans as, you know, monkeys, basically. And everyone's like, oh, he's so racist. And now we have to cancel him. And I'm like, he was always a racist.
Racist. He was so racist. What are you kidding? Of course he was. Listen, Nixon hugged Sammy Davis Jr., you know what I mean? Like, you know, and he did that because Sammy Davis Jr. was dissed by John F. Kennedy. And everyone hated, why are you going over to the other side? Motherfucker, you know, the side that you're on didn't want anything to do with me. You know, you go to where you love, you know, and yeah, that song, I Want to Be Me, you know, I gotta be me. Guy's got to do what he's got to do. You know what I mean? What I feel as an anarchist is that there is, like, politicians, especially political or law enforcement, these are not people who are smarter than us, better than us. There's nothing that sets them apart from us. That, well, you know, they're more, you know, well, when a cop dies, that's like serious. No, when anyone dies, it's fucking serious. You know, and we put our lives on the line. Yeah, I'm sure you do. For Wall Street, when it comes to like beating protesters over the head. But when a bunch of white coal miners in the 70s come to protest in front of, you know, Wall Street, you know what? Do cops beat them up? No, they talk to them. Why don't you come work up here? You know how much money we're making? You know, they could talk to them. And what does mass media show the protesters as? Real pissed off people? No. They're indigent people that have to use the corner McDonald's bathroom and blow it up all the time. Good. Fuck McDonald's. But it's not just indigent people. And you know what? They just totally ignored that movement. And after a while, you have to wonder, like, all right, I was watching Colbert recently, and he had Joseph Biden, you know? And he said, well, I'll tell you one thing, you know, my administration never, ever went above the law, you know? Like, really? Like, with that kill list? like when, didn't Obama like have so many predator drone strikes that he accidentally, I guess, killed two journalists that weren't born in Arabia and named Jamal Khashoggi, but they were born in America? Pretty sure both were white, too. Did you hear much about that? And I remember when there was that American citizen that moved to Yemen and he made a website about why you should join, you know, ISIS or whatever, you know, whatever his extreme point of view. And Obama, you know, said, I'm going to kill this guy. And the parents knew. And, you know, he was a U.S. citizen. Is there one lawyer in the United States that will stick up for my son? This is what this man's father said. His name was I can't pronounce those names. It's so hard. But yeah, he was that American citizen that started that website. He was droned to death over a website, and God knows the collateral damage that does. And it's just creepy that, you know what, we're not allowed to assassinate anyone, you know, that's off the books, but you can just predator drone a bunch of people to kingdom come. And you know what, that was Obama's, war on terror. And you end up killing a U.S. citizen for having a website that talks about joining ISIS. It must have been very persuasive, and he must have made a lot of great arguments. Otherwise, why even bother? Right?
Well, it's interesting because I think people ignore a lot of aspects of Obama's legacy. We've seen a ratcheting up of the anti-immigration stuff under Trump, but it wasn't that great under Obama either. I mean, I think Trump is worse,
sent,
but still.
Sent them back, sent more people back. Obama sent more people back, but Trump is making their children cry. And that's what he wants. He wants their children to cry. You know, because look how tough I am. I'm so big, and you know what? Let's face it. He could throw a football like Tom Brady, and he only needs 3 hours sleep, and he can fuck porn stars three times at a time, and I mean, come on, you know? But, I mean, like, he's told, like, so many fucking lies. You remember, don't worry, it's really big down there. Didn't the porn star say it looked like some fucking, Mario Brothers cartoon guy?
She said it looked like a mushroom.
Yeah, so, I mean, come on, dude. You know, it's like, you know what? What was the reason to even say that? And I don't think anyone gives a shit about him fucking a porn star. Like, no one gave a shit about Clinton getting a blowjob from Monica Lewinsky. Just like no one gave a shit if the Kennedy brothers were banging Marilyn Monroe. You know, and Frank Sinatra just had to fucking stick his dick into Jackie O. Does anyone really care? As long as you get the job done. But you know what? They don't get the job done. They just line their own pockets. And you know what? Frank Sinatra is better than me. I'm going to admit it. He has a lot of better recordings than me. He's better than me. But should he be a politician? No. You know, is he a politician? No. You know what I mean? Yeah, he could go campaigning, but I'm not, you know, for any politics. I'm for the fact that every time human beings are in a civilized society, they have to be stamped, briefed, debriefed, you know, numbered, every transaction, file, stamp, this, that. Complain, just the slightest complaint, beaten, you know, you could be murdered, you know. And the worst thing, they call you crazy and you're nuts. And who are these people to do that? Just because they have access to media? Media sucks. I mean,
well,
seriously,
I agree with that.
I mean, what were the TV shows that were so fucking important when I was growing up? Petticoat Junction? I mean, what? What, Johnny Carson show? You know? David Letterman's great. Yeah, David Letterman's great. But then you, I mean, come on. I mean, it's retarded. You know, mainstream media is lying, of course. And who is the biggest mainstream media in America? Fox News. And they're the biggest liars. And you know how Republicans call universal health care Obamacare? It's Obamacare. Guess what? They said it so much, I think I'm starting to get convinced. Obama does care. At least he cared enough to give fucking, you know, health care. And, you know, thumbs up for John McCain. Maybe he can't fly a plane, probably never wanted to fly a plane, John McCain, but at least he knows how to put the thumbs down. Donald Trump, and you know what? I don't even have a plan for health care. I just want to destroy this health care plan because it's Obamacare. And I hated when people called those track phones that they give out, you know, if you're on public assistance or you're old or whatever, Obama phones. Motherfucker, those phones came out during the Bush administration. Those are Bush phones. I know that for a friggin' fact. And I'll tell you something else. Trump has not touched anyone's public assistance. But when Obama came in, you don't think food stamp was cut right away? Because it was. And that's a fact. But they like to pretend, there's like, you know, listen, both sides, Democrats and Republicans take money from corporate interests. So none of them, AOC doesn't, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez doesn't.
We're a big fan of her here on this show, actually.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan of her, and I love the neighborhood. You know, I lived in Woodside, not Jackson Heights or wherever she's from, you know, representing. But you know what? I love that area. Because I remember after 9/11, all these posters came up because there's a large Pakistani, community in that neighborhood, and all these posters came up. Our neighbors are not our enemies, all over the place. I know who put them up, but it was very nice to see that. And then they'd be that stupid Christian person with their Bible in front of their big, important, you know, that has Pakistani products supermarket. It was this humongous place. And they didn't argue with the guy, but you could see the disgusted looks in their face or the twisted looks in their face as they walked by and saw that guy. You know, and you know what? It's like Christians, it's like, I don't know. I'm pretty sure Jesus in the New Testament, when the apostles ran over him, they said, yo, there's this guy and he's doing miracles and he's saying all the same shit you are, but he doesn't believe in you, not following you. What should we do? Should we condemn them? No, leave them alone. You know, and I don't get the proselytizing. Jesus, if you read the New Testament, Jesus didn't want to start a new religion. So how could he be into proselytizing or converting? You know what he wanted to do? He wanted to change the Jewish religion. You know, and when white supremacists say Jews will not replace us, motherfucker, Jews have been around a lot longer than white supremacists. And I don't think they've ever wanted to take your place. They're already supreme enough in the fact that they're God's chosen people and everyone else isn't. God chose them, no one else.
Well, that's something I wanted to get into. You know, I've always said to people, Jesus is a punk rocker, you know, when I read the Bible. What do you think, though? I wanted to ask you, what was the hardcore punk scene in New York like for people that may not have lived through it?
It was like burgeoning, so it was new. It was burgeoning and it was new. And I remember, you know, Dave's like, it's called hardcore punk. Like the scene that we're like playing in is called hardcore punk. You know, and I know hardcore, but around 1985, this promoter showed up and he was going to do something with the New York hardcore scene, you know? And we played a couple of gigs with him and then we told him to go fuck himself. His name was Chris Williamson after two shows. But the rest of New York hardcore, that scene that we were part of, just, you know, followed him for 3 years until they got sick and tired of getting beat with paid coke you know, and him just stealing all the money. And he said, if you have a show around here, we'll kick your ass. I think it's really, really disappointing. It took them 3 years to get rid of that guy when it only took Dave, you know, and me. I kind of helped Dave get rid of him in a way, by saying something totally inappropriate that, you know, Dave Chappelle likes to yell at his last, you know, his latest stand-up. Just to get this guy away from us. And, you know, the scene was young. I'm talking about 84, 85. I mean, when did the scene start? Like, you know, 1980, 81, you know? So, I mean, when there's a 55-year-old guy hanging out now, well, the scene started around 80, 81. So maybe, you know, he was back then, you know, around there. But when you're 50 and you're hanging around a bunch of kids, motherfucker, who are you, and why do you think you just run everything? But then when everyone acts like he runs everything, you kind of realize, oh, okay, you know, this group thinks we should be Rastafarians. This group thinks we should be Hare Krishnas. We thought y'all all should be anarchists, and we should start an affront to society, but an anarchist front where we all can at least show some unity and, you know, some strength that way, you know, because, you know, unity is strength. But it didn't work out that way. And you know what? We just went out to California. I mean, look, we just won. I mean, we're playing a lot of benefits out here, but it's like, well, I think, you know, what's the really, if you go on YouTube, and you look at Reagan, he's playing Tompkins Square Park, okay? And we do our set, and you see the camera pan out into the crowd. You could see it's a nice crowd. The band that goes after us, Nausea, performs. And when the camera pans out in the crowd is doubled because the New York hardcore scene has shown up to, you know, throw their, you know, their support behind Nausea. At that time, I'm sure the New York hardcore scene was in the park, and then we were ready to play, and they all left en masse just to say, no, we're not going to see Reagan Youth play. And we did like an 8-minute masterpiece called In the Beginning right there. But you know what? Fuck Reagan Youth, because some cocksucking promoter, Chris Williamson, tells you to. And then, and he's not, you know, welcome anymore. But I guess no one got that memo. Now that he's not welcome anymore, we could stop hating on Reagan Youth. Nah, not the New York hardcore scene. Honestly, the New York hardcore scene, I respect it, but it's a bunch of posturing bitch asses at the same time. And you couldn't quote me on that.
Well, I was going to say real quick, I mean, there were some bands in the New York hardcore scene that...
that are great. Antidote, big shout out to Louie. Great singer. Great to see him playing with Nuns again. You know what I mean? Big shout out to Antidote. Which, honestly, Dave and Surgeon, yo, Antidote's my favorite hardcore band, man. I can't believe Louie's doing it, man. They're really good, you know, like, and it was nice to see that. I remember John Joseph, before he was the singer of the Cro-Mags, Harley ran the Cro-Mags, right? He was in a band called Blood Clot, which was also some more roadies from Beverage just fucking ripping it up. They had a song, Kill the Beast, Excess, really nice stuff. You know, that's not a history you should be ashamed of. Love that shit. Loved seeing that. I remember they got to play Irving Plaza opening for the Bad Brains. And then, yeah, you know, Minor Threat shows up, and then, yeah, the Exploited show up. And you know what? When Jody Foster's Army showed up, that was nice. And Beastie Boys ended up opening for us for their first show when they played Manhattan. And it got nice. The hardcore scene got nice. Until that, what's it called, impresario, the guy who's going to, like, run everything? And also at the same time, someone from Anthrax, Ian, And he's a good guitar player. That short boy plays really good guitar in Anthrax. And whatever his name is. Hoppy wrote the New York Hardcore logo. I didn't come up with it. Not Reagan, you came up with it. Kevin Crowley from the band The Abused. We got our drummer from The Abused, and they ended up taking Charlie. When Charlie left, we took Steve from The Abused. That guy came up with that New York Hardcore logo. No one thought of copywriting it, and you know what? When someone you never heard of just copyrights it, you know, and then Dave, it didn't sit well with him. And I could honestly say some of the funniest shit is when that guy started hanging out and he was, all right, water under the bridge. And like he came over, you know, to meet Dave, and Dave would walk away like, you ain't mooching off my joint, bitch. You know, like I got to walk away from this guy. He wants to mooch off my joint. He ain't getting any. You know, and meanwhile, it was probably something else, but Dave just did not feel that. And it just made our hardcore scene seem soft like Carvel ice cream or Farina cream of wheat. Wasn't fucking hard. And that's where hardcore punk just turned into hardcore. Like hardcore what? Hardcore stupidity? Hardcore taste in bad music? Hardcore what?
Well, you know, Paul, I wanted to ask you about this because Reagan Youth really stands out to me. I know there were a few bands in the New York hardcore punk scene, even ones that I like Agnostic Front and Cro-Mags, that I think some of the songs would put me off. Stuff like...
Think of it all. Don't forget them. They're like the biggest...
Oh, yeah, yeah. But like the one... there was that one Agnostic Front song, Public Assistance, and some of it felt like...
I remember when that came out. Listen, you know what? They're going to have their point of view. I can't talk about their point of view.
But your point of view, what was your point of view and Dave's point of view in regards to what you were doing with Reagan Youth? And were there other bands like that?
Well, you know what? There was a lot of kids with, you know, crass, fight war, not wars, you know, a lot of that. But when there were bands like that, like Virus had a good song called Society's Orphan, and James Contra was the singer of that, but nothing ever really materialized where it was mostly like horror, you know, like, you know, the Misfits were playing a lot, you know. And then you had, the Necros from Ohio would play around a lot. I didn't know what their politics were, you know. Even Nausea, Victor went to, you know, join Nausea. They're a political band. What's their politics? That there's a cyber god? I really don't know. I know that they got better as musicians, and the band that I knew, that I used to see when I kind of got back, you know, and, you know, noticed that there's an internet, and it was a wonder going and watching my old bandmates, band that used to have, you know, we used to play a lot of shows with them because we shared a bandmate, how much they grew, you know what I mean? Which, you know, my band grew, so of course, musicians grow, you know? But like, you know what, when you're looking at another band's point of view, okay, you know what, that's their point of view. I wish there were bands that had that kind of point of view. Unfortunately, Pittsburgh, you know, had that shooting at that synagogue, you know. It seems like you would think cities, that urban center would be less open to that kind of racist, supremacist ideology. But here in New York, it's not like that. You know, there's a lot of, you know, Proud Boys or, you know, this skinhead gang, or even Sharps start saying some really racist thing. And when
you're the skinheads against racial prejudice?
Yeah, will open his mouth and say something like a very inappropriate, or let me put it this way, an unfunny racist stereotype, typical joke. You know, you can get away with jokes if you're funny. You know what I mean? And if there's like some, you know, I don't want to like, you know what, say that you have to be politically correct. You can't talk about anything. You should be able to talk about anything. And the one good thing about Trump now is that, you know what, when Obama was elected, so many people were cheering because it was such a landslide victory. You know, I looked at all these Americans cheering, and it seemed like they were saying, hey, we're not racist. Look, we're not racist. We're not racist. But this is a racist society. Just the word race is retarded. It's an ethnicity. It's not a race. Why the fuck should Serbians be in a race with Croatians? Yeah, you know, to get that fucking railway station so we can control your land, control your lives, you know. And that's where authority comes in. Why should anyone hold any authority over anyone else? And I'm not saying, oh, my God, there's a child predator out there. Go and stop him. Or this guy's going to blow up my car. What should I do? Blowing up your neighbor's car does not give you freedom. I'm talking about total liberty, where no one tells you what to do and you don't tell anyone else what to do. That doesn't mean you don't work together. Doesn't mean you can't accomplish great things. Doesn't mean that, you know what, as you got the blueprints out on, you know, on the round table, yes, they're all equals, but the head amongst equal will be that engineer that tells you what the blueprints mean, you know? And honestly, I respect France in the 50s, the factory workers, the guys that built the factory, the guys that worked the factory, the guys that delivered the shit that came out of the factory, took over the factory. Who is this one guy who's done none of these three things? Why does he get to own all this shit?
Well, you know,
here in America, I mean, look how they protest in Hong Kong. And when you know what? When white Anglo-Saxon Protestants protest, it's like their God-given right. But when someone else protests and causes damage, oh, my God, horrible people. Really? Isn't that what your Boston Tea Party was all about? And what was America founded on? Rich, white, Anglo-Saxon Protestant landowners that did not want to pay their taxes to a king. So they started a country where they don't pay taxes, but everyone else is a guest here and does. But this is a country of immigrants, and you know what? Where France changes the updates their constitution every 2 years, these motherfuckers stick to the Second Amendment, especially that ugly Donald Trump's kid. Oh, my God. I wish I could get one of those elephant guns and, like, blow his foot. Not an elephant gun. Just, like, a bear gun from Alaska and have that, like, bat right in his head and just annihilate him with his stupid shit. You know, I mean, killing the fucking elephant from, like, a long-range hunter just so it could play with its tail? God, you're a fucking asshole. But look who his father is. Can you blame him?
Right. Well, this actually leads me into something I wanted to ask you about. And a bunch of other people were asking me, some of my listeners were asking me to question you about this. They wanted to know, and I wanted to know, were there people that misinterpreted Reagan Youth when you guys were, you know, doing the band? I mean,
No one knew what we looked like when we went out. When we went out, no one really knew what we looked like. You know, like, you know, we thought you're going to be skinheads. You know, there's a black drummer, Cuban bassist, Jewish singer, and I'm the white guy, and I'm more tan than anyone else in the band. Like, now, what the fuck are you, man? You got a serious tan, you know. And you know what? If I told them I'm Yugoslavian, they're going to say, oh, it's your Czechoslovakian. It's like, why bother? You know, you're not going to get it right. So just don't worry what I am. I'm not what you think I am. I'm not Italian. I'm not Polish. I'm not Hungarian. I'm not South American. I'm not Puerto Rican. Just leave me alone. I know I can. Whatever. I mean, it was funny because they were like, what? And then the skinheads, when they see us, all right, let's see what you got. Being that we weren't a wimpy band, we could tear shit up. And I hate when people are like, Reagan, please slow and put no. We'll throw a slow song in. You know, because when every song is going 180 miles per hour, what the fuck is fast and what is slow? Every song is 180 miles per hour. But if you throw a 60 per mile song in there, or what will the neighbors think, a 45 per mile hour song in there, then the 180 per mile song sounds fucking fast. And you got to have dynamics. And there's some bands that are just the same speed throughout the whole thing. Or when you see a guitar player and he sets up his effects and he uses them throughout every single song. I mean, that's like having, like, you know, songs like kids, having 12 kids and dressing them all in the same fucking jeans, sneakers, t-shirt. Like, what are they? I mean, you know, that's weird when twins do it. I mean, it's funny when the Lucas brothers do it on their fucking cartoon, but, like, you know, like, it's fucking weird. So you want to personalize every song like it's almost like, you know, like a psalm, like, you know, a religious mantra you want to give out there to make people think and have discourse. And some bands will sing about "She's My Cherry Pie," like that's the most important thing. That's the biggest hit they're going to have. I'd rather have songs like "Are You Happy?" Are you really happy with all that nervous twitching and anxious twitching?
You know what? That's my favorite Reagan Youth song. I've listened to it since I was 14. "Are You Happy?" is my favorite.
Yeah, thank you, thank you. We have a lot of good ones. "We're Urban Savages," "No One Can Manage Us," "We Gotta Rock the Street," you know, "Locked Inside the City Like a Bird Locked in a Cage," "Corporate Corruption," "Polluting Up My Brain," "Put Locks on Your Windows," "Put Locks on Your Doors," "Because I'm Gonna Burn Your City Down," right to the floor, you know, with the tribal drumming. I mean, you know, we thought things out and only put out two records, but there's no album filler. I can actually play every song live except that last instrumental thing, "Back to the Garden," parts 1 through 4. But that's okay, because that Riot Girls movie used that instrumental in their movie. And I was complaining to someone, like, East Bay Ray wrote a fucking great instrumental, "Pipe Truck." Shit, I wish I wrote something great like that. I wrote a shitty instrumental. But look at this. The Riot Girls movie wants to use it. So, shit, I got to see it and see how it works. Maybe it's just something that's meant for movies or something. I don't know.
You guys have been in a lot of movies, too.
Movies and, like, you know, X-Men on Channel 7, and Nicolas Cage has, like, 3 different fucking movie, TV, cable placements, whatever, with fucking songs. He really likes Urban Savages. Really likes In Any Town, and what do you call, what's that movie, Shameful? I mean, the TV series Shameful, or whatever, with William Macy?
Shameless.
"Are You Happy?" You know what? I gave shout out to the New York hardcore scene. Is in the song "Heavy Metal Shuffle" when he says he's from Astoria, Queens, or he's from Jamaica, and pauses Queens, because a lot of those rosters, like, "I'm from Jamaica," and then you find out, oh, you've never been on that island, and your parents aren't from that island. You just like to pretend you're a Rasta. You're from Jamaica, Queens, you know, like Forest Hills, Queens, you know, from Jamaica, like, you know, next to Haiti and Dominican Republic and Cuba. Nah, dude, you're not from that area.
You think about Airheads?
I thought they should use the heavy metal shuffle, but this band, Degeneration, already...
They used Degenerated, I think.
Well, no, this band, Degeneration, did it, like, behind my back, and then when they didn't want them to use it, you know, instead of reaching out to me, it was too late. And I could have gotten a lot more money, but they're a really big company, and I'm a little nobody, so I didn't rape them. And it's good, because at least they're still, you know, business partners with me, and if I have a problem with, like, a publisher or something, boom, call them up, and... Publisher paid me twice. He was so scared. Like, don't tell my name to, you know, whatever woman, her name. I know her name. I don't want to mention it. She's business contact. But, you know, like, you know, it wasn't my fault. But what I was saying is 50 Cent is from Jamaica, Queens. And when Nicolas Cage is a cop and he goes to catch 50 Cent or look for him, and he's at his titty bar, it's nice to see a scene, right, in a movie, and it's a titty bar scene, and what song are they working the pole to and walking around with their titties out? The Heavy Metal Shuffle.
Right, right.
I like that. I think that one is probably the nicest movie placement, TV placement out of all the songs. I also like Fierce People when those rich kids are listening to USA and In Dog We Trust. It has that Captain America actor in it and that fucking Star Trek actor that ended up dying when he was like 27, Anton Yelchin. I mean, it had Donald Sutherland and Diane Lane were in the movie. It was called Fierce People. Pretty fucking, you know, cool movie. And you know what? Justified used the song USA. A racist were listening to it. And someone said, oh, like, alert people that they're going to be using your song. I said, let's hear it first. You hear 2 seconds of that song. And then the racist closed the door. But when you think about the amount of money they paid for each song, you're like, damn, man, that's a lot for 2 seconds. And I said, imagine if you fucking said, watch, you're going to be like, where was that? That 2 second shit? You know, but you know what? If you need like a racist to listen to fucking music, and you know, when the Justified sheriff is after them, you might as well pick something safe like Reagan Youth, as opposed to Screwdriver, right?
Screwdriver is such a shitty band, too.
I mean, you know what? I'm sure some of their music ain't that bad. You know, I don't want to knock any other human being, but. Did you really? I mean, maybe, you know, I'm sure they're probably like, you know what, look in hindsight, maybe you should have, like, you know what, you know, taken the, you know, class war approach, you know. Yeah, I love the Exploited, Class War. I love that song. I covered that. You know, it's just like, fuck that shit. I love the Exploited. And I love music. Like, every once in a while, I like to keep the band on its toes. Like, learn the song. 5 minutes. Fucking punk song. How can you not learn this shit in 5 minutes and then make them play it? You know, and have that freshness to it. Like, I felt like a kid again playing. And you have to understand, when Dave Insurgent was alive, the last gig we played, 15 people showed up. I think it was in Pittsburgh, or maybe it was like in Allentown. Half of them left after our first song. So by the second song, we're playing in front of like 7 people. And you know what? You just think it's a failure until like, what, like 18 years later, you log on to the thing called an internet that you never heard of before. You know, the computer, it's the internet. You'll see. And I was on Yahoo for 6 months until someone typed in Google. I was like, I mean, there's another search engine. They're like, you've been just on Google. I mean, on Yahoo this whole time. It's like, I mean, there's another thing, you know, like, it takes you a while, you know, but it was nice seeing all that love. It was nice seeing all that love for the band, and I thought, all right, Dave, you know, you're brilliant and all that, but I don't think people's emotions are ready to grasp that, you know, let's take that step towards, you know, thinking collectively as opposed to thinking, you know, greedily and only for ourselves. When the people that are going to be saying that are, you know, supposedly the elites of society, and in an anarchist society, there are no elitists. And when they say, you know, the mainstream elites, you know, like the mainstream elites, get the fuck out of here with your mainstream elites. That's like saying mainstream punk. Punk rock is against the mainstream, so how can it be mainstream punk if punk rock was built to be against the mainstream classic rock? They didn't want to bring the opera to the masses like Queen, even though Queen, you know, like with that album, News of the World, had that song Sheer Heart Attack. The drummer wrote it. It sounded very punk rock and shit. I'm sure they were kind of like also, you know, thinking it was cool. But I mean, just back to those, you know, rock and roll roots, 3 songs, even country, you know, country has some of the most beautiful lyrics, you know. Seriously, I wish I went to see Conway Twitty when he played Peppermint Lounge. I played a week after him. I should have showed up. So I'm playing a week. you know, later, can I come meet Mr. Twitty, you know, backstage? Hey, man, you're a fucking great, you know, you're a great fucking singer. Great fucking performer. And listen, there's only two types of music. It's either good or bad. And you know what? Not bad. Hey, that music, not bad, doesn't make it good. You know, and if you're really in that top tier, you're a great musician. You're a great artist. R. Kelly's a great artist. Does that make him a great human being? You know, and you have to just look at the message. Yeah, Dave died, but he didn't walk, you know, committed suicide. He didn't walk in his shoes. His mother, he never got to meet his grandparents, his uncles, his cousins, anyone from his mom's side, because each and every one of her bloodline was killed by the Nazis. They couldn't kill her because she was like a hot piece of ass. And it was just like, oh, we'll kill her tomorrow. Do you really want to kill her? You kill her. I don't want to kill her. You know, and yeah, she survived on her looks, you know, and then afterwards her father was in an army that the Russians didn't want these Russian Jews, so this general from England called Anders took over all these Russian Jews, and they're the ones that, and you know, all the way from the Russian side of Poland, all the front, you know, through Iran until they end up in Israel, you know, Palestine and start Israel. Dave's father could have been one of those guys that helped start Israel, but he was such a loyal soldier. He just stuck with that British, you know, army. You know, that's how, you know, strict he was, or loyal or whatever. And Dave's father, I guess, didn't think he was getting loyalty from his son, but he didn't notice that all these kids are playing together. And I'm sure he was terrified after seeing what happened in World War II. But so did my parents. I mean, and they were little kids, so maybe it didn't affect them like grown-ups did. But you know what? When you're beaten every single day because mom has to beat you every single day because her husband died and you look just like her husband and you remind her of not having a husband every day, you hop on a boat and you row it across a sea. Not an ocean, but a sea, until you get the fuck out of that country. You know, so that's, you know, yeah, there's a lot, but my parents let me play afterwards, you know, but my dad wasn't in the army, you know, his grandfather was, and my mom, I mean, and they missed school. You think when there's a three-way civil war going on in your country while World War II is going on, and you're occupied by Italians and Germans, and there's three different armies fighting it out there, you think you're going to school? Those 3-4 years, shit. You're lucky to fucking find something to eat, you know? And then you come to Queens. You know, we end up meeting in Queens. Me and Dave were the two kids whose parents had to leave their homeland and come to America. All the other kids were already Americanized Jews or Jew-wops. Or Italians, you know, Jew-wop is half Jewish, half Italian, like Tank Hameson, you know, the Hameson brothers or something, you know, or like the Billy Gramandos. These were all the big, tough guys in the neighborhood, you know. We were like tiny little kids compared to them. It's funny, now when I went to Forest Hills, I saw like one of those tough guys and said, you wouldn't be one of those guys that made fun of us punk rockers, would you? No, not me. You know, it's like, good answer. You know, because I'm sure he still kicked my ass. This guy was fucking big. It was big. But you know when you remember them, they're big because you're in high school and you haven't grown out yet. And then you see them later on, it's like, damn, man, I can't believe I'm bigger than you. Hey, wait, can I bitch slap you right now? You know, oh, my God. I was so afraid of you. You didn't grow at all. Like, shit, I sprouted like another 6 inches since high school, you know. And that's how it works, you know, when you're a kid. There's going to be bullies, and then you're going to outgrow those bullies. And no, I didn't bitch slap the guy in the face or any shit like that. And yeah, I was a bully, and yeah, I was bullied. And you know what? Bullying is wrong. You know, teasing people is the worst. Teasing people just makes the people that are getting teased do even crazier shit. You know, and imagine if Obama never said anything about it. Imagine if he said Trump would make great president, probably. You know, then he probably wouldn't have to run. Because Trump wouldn't have belittled him. And I think Donald Trump, imagine Obama saying that. I think people would be underestimating Donald Trump. He's a real formidable candidate. And I wouldn't be surprised if he was president, you know, next go around if the Democrats don't get their act together. So what about Hillary? I don't know. It's hard to win an election when the Clinton Foundation ripped off all those donations that were supposed to go to Haiti when they had that horrible earthquake that killed 200,000 people, not like 20 or 100 or 1,000, 200,000 people. And they just built a hospital on the other side of the island where the hospital wasn't needed. They pocketed all that money. You don't think there weren't voodoo ceremonies going on that were saying, no Hillary. Hillary, and fire would come out, and spit in my, fuck Hillary. And what happened? Hillary's going to win, Trump. You know, Vegas got like 9-2, if you want to bet on Trump, bet $20 to win 90. If you want to bet on Hillary, bet 110 to win 10. You know, trust me. The praying that went on that island that's not too far away from America was probably what cost Hillary that election.
Well, Paul, we're about at the hour mark. I was wondering if I could ask you maybe one or two more questions before you go.
Yeah, I'll keep it brief.
Okay. I guess I wanted to ask you first about just how did the first incarnation of Reagan Youth and sort of maybe you could talk a little bit about the youth anthems for a new world order, since we didn't really get into that.
The first incarnation ended because the bass player, Andy Appice, and the singer argued way too much. And I'm not Jewish. I'm Catholic. I was raised Catholic. And Charlie Bonet is Puerto Rican, so I don't know if he's like one of those, Catholics or that Pentecostal. I don't think he cares. But Andy was Jewish, Dave was Jewish, it was a Jewish neighborhood. It was like the Battle of Alpha Jews, and Dave made me fire him. And it really sucked, because Andy he's the only musician out of all those musicians in the 80s that actually remained my friend afterwards. You know, and even though Dave made me fire him, I said, Dave, he's going to know you're the one that wanted him fired, not me. You know he's going to come up and talk to you. Yeah, just fire him, you know. And then it was around Christmas time, you know, Hanukkah time, New Year's Eve. Like, what a time to fire him. And then Charlie was still our drummer. Al Pike was brought in then as our bass player replacing Andy. And then Charlie felt frustrated, you know, and he left. And then we got the drummer from The Abused. His name was Steve. He was a great drummer. And that's the lineup. Steve on drums, Al on bass. But when you look at the background singers, Charlie Bonet is singing background with Steve Pass and Dave's best friend Russell Zanka. Andy Appice was not invited. I would have invited him, but Dave was, no, what'd you do it? You know, and it's like, I wish I opened up my mouth more. Like, nah, dude, but Dave was like that head amongst equals. When I wrote something, I called Dave up. Dave, what do you want to do with this? You know, I didn't go to Andy. Andy, what do you want to do with this? Andy never wrote a song. Victor, whenever he came up with something, the guy who replaced Al, and this was our third bass player now after Al left to remain a postal worker and not become a bass player and come with us to California, Victor did. Victor was one of those guys that was also very argumentative with Dave, and Dave wrote a not so very nice thing about him on the volume 2 liner notes, or whatever the fuck you want to call it. I think he wrote this thing like, to Charlie Tripper, Andy Appice, Vic Venom, and Rick Royale. Close, but no cigar. Like, you guys played with us, never made it on vinyl. Like, too bad, you know? That was Dave's, like, you know, saying, not mine. And people like, well, you wrote that. You wrote this. Can I have the credit for doing all the artwork on the cover, too? I mean, I'll tell you what my fucking stupid contributions were. Bing, bomb, boom, on the back of fucking volume 2. And that mushroom cloud, you know? Come on. Or the Yugoslavian sounding names, whatever. All right, that's what happened then. Give me the second question.
Oh, I was just going to ask you about what do you think the sort of legacy of Reagan Youth is? I know some people, I think, are very hard on Dave Insurgent. I know he wasn't a perfect person, but I think he also had a lot of issues to deal with. So maybe if you could comment that on the and on the legacy of Reagan Youth.
I think now that it's like around 2000, you know, 2000 years ago, you had Jesus Christ, okay? Then 1,000 years ago, you had a papal schism, split the church in two. Now, I think because it's the dawning of Aquarius, harmony and understanding, and that Piscean repressive age is going to go out. In the future, I believe that this might actually become like religious psalms, not just songs. Dave is already a myth. I remember Aaron the Pie Man, the yippie that threw pies in politicians' faces at the Chicago Democratic Convention. You know, he knew Dave. The Dave that you and I knew does not exist. Yeah, he existed. Yeah, we all knew him, but he does not exist anymore. The Dave that exists now is a myth. And I think Dave will be mythologized. I think, like, he could be like Moses. I'm just saying he's Jesus. He could be like Moses. And I could be like Aaron, carrying the staff, the guitar, and just keeping it going. And then hopefully sometime in the future, maybe, just maybe, anarchy will not be known about going buck wild, but about living in true, total liberty. You know what I mean? Where you actually don't, like, all right, there's no one, you know, like we could all live together without screwing each other over. Why does three people have to have more money than half of everyone in America? Why? Why is that so fucking important? And I've met people in high school. I thought you're doing good. You got the house. You got the wife, you worked on Wall Street, you had the kids. Paul, that was 20 years ago. The kids are leaving. The marriage is over. Haven't paid the fucking bank in 5 years. That's going to be over soon. Can you help me get an apartment? Well, was it worth it? Nah, because they sold you a bullshit dream. Sold you a bullshit dream. You know, you need the house, 2.3 kids, 2-car garage. Blah, blah, blah. If you're a doctor, you need 20 cars. But in Europe, they have doctors. How many cars do they need? You know? And is it about enriching yourself? And look, America, the biggest drug deals in America are the Koch brothers. How fucking ironic. The Koch brothers, spelled K-O-C-H, the makers of OxyContin.
You know, one of them just passed away, David Koch.
Yeah, and
people...
Died. I hope he's sucking cock in hell. But that's because I'm a Catholic, and that's how I like to believe shit. No, I'm only kidding. I'll pick a Buddhist point of view of that.
Well, people were saying, why are there these people celebrating David Koch's death? There were people that were celebrating, and everyone's all mad. How can you celebrate this man's death? He was a human being, too.
Because, you know why? Because he was a horrible human being, but he also paid for all those treatment programs to help the disease he helped create. That epidemic he created, he also helped jobs so people could become social workers and help people who never had access to heroin, Vermont. Bernie, I'm sorry, but you were slipping on the bundle. I think you were slipping on that OxyContin pill because, yeah, you're a great politician, but how did you let Big Pharma just come and turn your beautiful little New Hampshire state, Vermont, and your maple syrup turned into fucking what? A fucking OxyContin? Come on. OxyContin, and then when you can't afford OxyContin, you go and get heroin, and then the Mexicans are making fentanyl. And you don't think Mexicans would rather grow fucking mangoes instead of fucking poppy plants? Come on. Seriously. What would you rather, if you were a farmer, what would you rather grow?
Mangoes?
Mangoes, yeah. You know, and then, you know what, sell them at a good price. Or you have to have a war with your neighbors. Because they want, you know, they don't have enough land to grow their poppy seeds. And then you have to fucking buy a fancy truck, pad it up, pay off the fucking customs. The most corrupt law enforcement agency out of them all, customs. I know this because I had a friend that had a customs friend in JFK. He had the best fucking weed. The best. And this is back in the 80s when it was like impossible to get fucking weed like he was getting. I said, where did you get this? I had a certain custom JFK. Shit, dude. What fucking part of the world did this amazing, bud come from? But I don't want to talk about, like, you know, medicinal marijuana. And it's not a drug, it's an herb. The weed. All right? Aspirin's a fucking drug. And you know what? It's time to stop shaming drug addicts. They only hurt themselves. Bankers hurt fucking family. Bankers are fucking evil. They walk around like their shit don't stink. You know what? It's time to fucking call bankers like you fucking junkie motherfucker. I'm not a junkie. Yeah, you are. You're a junkie from my fucking house. You stole it, you fuck! And kill them. And just leave the fuck. I mean, come on. These guys are just going to get high. What are they going to do? Fucking steal a fucking broken radio from you? Try to clean it up and sell it for $3? Come on. And I'm not talking about badass cartel people either. All right? I think, you got the gist of what I'm bringing up, right?
No, I feel you on that. I guess in closing, I guess you're working on something now. I want to ask you about that. But I also, it just crossed my mind. You mentioned that, you know, there's these Proud Boys in New York. There's these...
Yeah, I think it's like Paula Skinhead in Green Point or wherever they're in that part of Brooklyn that's really Queens. Let me put it that way.
I guess what I was going to ask is, you know, we have a lot of kids today that are either... you know, getting indoctrinated into this sort of fascist cult. And then we have the kids fighting back. What advice do you have to the kids following the footsteps of Reagan Youth, Rock Against Racism, the kids that are fighting back against these fascist skinheads and Proud Boy types?
This is my advice. You will never coerce those supremacists by browbeating them and calling them stupid and all that. The only way you can, you know, first of all, respect them for not being fence sitters. At least they've taken a sign. You know, now try to win over the argument logically. And if they're stupid or Nazis, they're very smart. And you know what? You know, how can you argue with a Nazi and all that? You know what? That's the only way you can ever. Win over them. And if that's not going to work and it has to come down to a fight, then you know what? You at least are on the side of righteousness. And no matter how much evil wins, there's always that yin-yang balance where something happens where, oh my God, I can't believe that white supremacist kid was supposed to inherit the KKK and the, you know, white national movement, married a black girl and wants to, you know, or look at Spain. They were fascist. Now they're the one true country with a three-party government. You know, so maybe they're going to go through their austerity, but let's hope their kids and their children and their children's children But you know what? Like Steve Banning said, I think a civil war is coming. You got to choose a side. No more fence sitting. All right. First of all, look at them. Look at those fascists or those white supremacists. And you know what? Know that they are human too. Don't demonize them, but realize the American education system failed them. Why not have an honest debate, discourse? And yeah, just because Trump is a liar, does that mean every single white supremacist is a liar? Or maybe they just believe mass media? And there's nothing worse than movies that show how the little guy wins at the end. That never, ever happens in real life. It just promotes false hope. I had to throw that in there, sorry.
Well, I was going to say, it just came out a few weeks ago in August that there's this guy, Matthew Q. Gebert. He's literally a white nationalist, and he's working in the State Department. I mean, this is a very crazy moment we find ourselves in. So I appreciate everything you have done with Reagan Youth and sort of I want to keep that torch alive because you guys sort of spoke out.
So do I. And you know what? And you know what? When Dave yelled out, you know what, in New Aryans, a New Aryan, blonde hair, blue eyed New Aryan, you know, death to the Nazis and the Ku Klux Klan, we can have whites with blonde hair and blue eyes that are against white supremacy. And you know what? You got to keep them on our side. And then, you know what, they're the ones that need to argue with the other. You don't put a Nation of Islam guy to go argue with the leader of the Grand Wizard of the, you know, Indiana chapter of the Ku Klux Klan, Southern District, or some shit like that. You don't. You send, you know, other whites in. Why are you thinking this is better for society? Don't you see how it's better this way? And your fears are unfounded. You know, but you have to understand, there's been, when I go to Germany, they'll say things like, thanks for pointing out your own country's fault. Didn't you Holocaust the Native Americans? And we did. All right, they tried to wipe out the Jews. We didn't wipe out the Iroquois. I haven't met an Iroquois Indian in my entire fucking life. Elizabeth Warren is the closest we can meet. A Native American, yeah, I've been to Omaha. I met someone from the Winnebago tribe. I know in the Pacific Northwest, there's a lot more Native Americans because Canada, there's a lot of fighting that went on. And when you think about Trump saying, you know, why do we have to have people from shithole countries? Why can't we get them from Norway? When they were coming from Norway, they were treated like shit. Back, you know, during the Johnson County Civil War and shit like that. Out in the Pacific Northwest. West, you know, so, you know, it's always been a country of immigrants. It's never been white, you know, and let's realize one thing. The poor can start a revolution and win. I know in school they say it's got to be the middle class or rich people. The poor people can never get, it can revolt, but they've never had a successful revolution. A lot. Because after America had a successful revolution, Haiti did. They didn't kill all the white people. They just killed all the French, the Italians, the Polish, the Germans that, you know, weren't believing so much in Napoleon anymore since he married a Habsburg princess and he wasn't for the people. Said, why are we fighting for these people's liberation? They were slaves and they liberated themselves. Because I'm your commander. That's why now we're leaving your army. We're going to go live there. And you know what? The French army lost, and Haiti's the first country to be founded by black people in the history, in the history of mankind up till like the last 15,000 years, okay? And yeah, Haile Selassie in Ethiopia, but that came after Haiti, okay? So think of it this way. Well, you know, there were mulattoes. Yeah, they were the first ones killed. You know, they could be the middle class. There is no such thing as a middle class slave. And yeah, they can bring up like Toussaint Louverture, who was caught by the French and died in jail. He didn't start the revolution. And Dessalines, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, was the general that beat the French. and Marcus Garvey dressed like Dessalines. Because you don't think he noticed what was going on. He's from Jamaica, real close. And there is a Jamaican that wasn't influential in the Haitian Revolution. Now, you know what whites call it? A massacre. Slaughter. And, you know, Pat Robertson, oh, what the Haitians did, and there was Napoleon III. And, no, it's not Napoleon III, you lying fuck. You know, and they're still, but God did the earthquake to punish them for what they did to us nice white people. They didn't kill all the white people, just those ugly French. And don't you want to call French fries freedom fries now, you fuck? Well, let's end it there, huh?
Definitely, definitely. And I hope we went out.
Covered a lot of ground. I hope I explained myself. I hope I was politically incorrect. I hope people are going to say you shouldn't have said that. I hope people can say I like what you said. Hope people get some discourse. I hope people start thinking about the world. And you know what? Your Facebook or your Instagram is in your own personal TV channel. And you know what? I know high school might mean everything to you when you're a little kid, but as soon as you leave high school, there's a whole nother world. Think of yourself as a caterpillar in high school. And you might be that caterpillar that's the high school quarterback, that's dating the caterpillar that's the head cheerleader. And you get to fucking college. Those caterpillar nerds might turn into fucking big butterflies, and your fucking butterfly wings are going to be shit in college. So just remember, don't think high school is everything. A lot of kids could be caught up with that. There's a whole world ahead of you. And after high school doesn't follow you around. Thank God.
Well, hey, Paul, I want to thank you again for coming on Parallax Views. If there's anything you want to plug right now, go ahead and do that.
All right. We have a Christmas song coming out in Christmas time. Cleopatra Records have put on a comp. It's called It's a Punk Rock Christmas. And there's a Halloween comp with a bunch of bands, a lot of good bands, and we did a cover of It's a Monster's Holiday. It sounds kind of punk. Hope you dig it. And if I play California in December, I'm going to try to make it. It's only 4 days. Hope to see you there, all right? Peace out, everyone, and nice talking to you, JG. Good luck.
Well, that does it for this edition of Parallax Views. Hopefully this episode gave you a little bit of a weekend fix. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Paul Cripple of Reagan Youth. If you haven't listened to Reagan Youth, check out their music. You can find them on YouTube. I believe their albums are released through Cleopatra Records. They have a band camp. Just check it out, folks. Is Reagan Youth is like one of the legends of the New York hardcore punk scene. I think they're still resonant today, especially in this age of Antifa versus the alt-right. So check out Reagan Youth, folks. If you can, please support me on Patreon. I just released a bonus episode for you all featuring friend of the show Marlon Ettinger and I talking over the Democratic debates. If you ever wanted to hear Marlon go off about reptilian conspiracy theories of David Icke and how all the candidates have unnaturally perfect hair and me laughing at everything in the debates, well, that'll be the episode to listen to. Also, fingers crossed, I should be starting up a Parallax Views Week in Review show, a sort of current events edition of Parallax Views for Patreon supporters. And with that being said, until next time, you've been listening to Parallax Views. With Parallax Views. To Parallax Views. With Parallax Views.
The way out is not simply to say, don't do it, just to prohibit. It's nothing else. If we don't do it, others will be doing it like crazy. So, you know, we have to confront the problem. But no, basically, I know of the great anxiety problems, new forms of control, but it's also new forms of freedom. This is why I always emphasize that internet and all this new digital stuff, it's a very ambiguous phenomenon, but it's the field of struggle. New forms of enslavement, but at the same time, new incredible forms of freedom. We have to accept the fight. With no nostalgia for old, allegedly more authentic communities or whatever. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid.